The last 2 days we have been trying to live as poets in Christ, as someone who stops to listen to the sounds of life, the breathing of God, the laughter of the earth, and also, as we said yesterday, to listen very softly and very sensitively to the quiver of the lonely spirit, to the tingle of the heart that is pulling in, is withdrawing, and the door that is closing on a life that is lonely. And this morning I'd like to have you listen for a few moments to hunger. One of the songs that's in the presentation this evening is one song, and I'd like to read just one or two verses of that song. One verse, the second last verse, reads this way: 3 days ago, across the street, she searched my garbage pail, a yellow crust, an empty breast. I heard her baby wail. Listen. Listen to the breathing at your side. Listen to the beat of life that's free. Listen to the snap of breaking bread and to the splash of wine with me. There's a little splash in the background here too. Hunger is not necessarily just that thing which you feel before breakfast, which many of you may not even feel, or probably don't feel anything at all right now, because you've had ample pancakes, which don't ever leave that feeling of hunger afterwards. Hunger is something that is much stronger and much deeper than just the hunger for food. It's an urge that's in all of us. An urge that is deeper even than the thing that we were talking about yesterday. That's something that's below and deep in every man, that wants him to rise up and to find things, to discover things, to conquer things, to overcome the world, to be lord of the world. And this swelling of our ego, the swelling of the person that's deep down in there, that keeps coming up, that keeps wanting to do something more, even though very often on the surface we find people saying, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to try. Deep below, God has made man so that he has got drives and urges, and they're real, that he's got ambitions. He's made man with a certain power to rule the world. And there's a part of Genesis 1, which we didn't look at yet, but I'd like to turn to that first. Genesis 1, the verses 26, 7, and 8. There's a place there which puts man in his perspective in the world. Why God made man the way he did. It says this: let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let him rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and the cattle and over all the earth. The image of God involves this, that God gives man the whole world to rule. The power to rule, the privilege to rule, the urge to rule. Man is placed over the earth. The earth is on our hands. We've got this earth as a baby on our hands to take care of. That's our job. We are the vice-regents of the earth for God. And then it goes on to say, and so God did make man in his image. He made them male and female, and then he blessed them. And one of the words that we miss so readily in the Old Testament is that word bless. A blessing is not just putting your hand on somebody and saying, nice boy, or everything will be all right. Blessing is a power. When I give you a blessing, that means that there is power that goes from me to you. Life power. God's divine, quote, vitamin pill, if you will. That life power that enables man to live, to rule, to control the world. And that urge is put into every man from the very beginning. And that urge is connected in the next verse with what Mrs. Collins is going to talk about this morning. And God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply. The sex drive, the sex is part of that blessing that God gives to man at the very beginning. That urge, that drive to rule all things and to control the world. And so it's not necessarily wrong to have all of these hungers and these drives and these urges that are deep inside of us. Power is natural. And we feel this power today, this power, black power, white power, flower power, if you will, whatever power it is. But it's there. Everyone wants to express this somehow. But it's when that power, that urge that's there deep in me, as strong as I know it is and it's in you, begins to be more than the right kind of power, when it becomes rebellious, when it becomes destructive, when it tramples on people on the way, and we hear the whimper of crushed souls under our feet, when it becomes sheer hostility and not righteous activity. And that's where the story for this morning comes in. Story of the man called Cain in Genesis 4. Cain, the story of Cain, is not always understood, it seems to me. It's one of the most wonderful stories, and yet one of the most terrible stories in the Bible. I'd like you to listen to the sounds of hunger, the sounds of the urges and the drives of man as you listen to this story. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the field, and Abel brought the firstlings of his flock. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. We don't know why, it just says that's the case. And Cain was very angry. Now the question of his anger comes into the picture, this urge to be angry. Of course, anger in itself is not always necessarily wrong either. And sometimes we sort of jump on everybody. As soon as they're angry, it's wrong. Very often, anger is a necessary way of cleansing ourselves. We have to sometimes get angry. And I've always wanted to write a litany of anger so that we could say to God the things that we were angry about and confess it and cleanse it. And let it come. But God says to him, it's one thing to be angry, but watch out, there's something else. There's a thing called sin, that power, that thing that gets a hold of what our drives are, our anger, our whatever it is, and makes it evil. Sin is there at the door, and if you listen, look at the original, like a demon snarling, the snarling of that sin out there that wants to control those drives and things that you have so that they become far more important than anything else you've got in your life. And Cain said to his brother, let's go out in the field. And now the evil begins to control him. And Cain rose up against his brother and killed him. And the Lord said, where is Abel, your brother? He said, who am I? Am I my brother's keeper? Suddenly the drive had become destructive. And death, the death of a life, had happened. And God said, the voice of your brother's blood is crying from the ground. And there in that sentence is all the words you need for the New Testament to be coming, for Christ to come, for the death of Christ. The voice of our brother's blood is crying from the ground. It's shed, and it is not atoned. It is left, and the pain trickles up even to our ears today after many years of reading those same texts. And so now you are cursed. There is always division, there is always alienation, there is always a breach. And the pain and the destruction takes over. And our rule and our drive becomes evil. And so Cain becomes a wanderer. But we always forget the ending of the story. And we always tend to think that the mark of Cain is the mark of the fact that he's a murderer.
That's not true.
Cain was a murderer. And if you watched that story just last week, the Mr. Cain story, you felt the anguish, the groan, and the anguish of that man as that kept coming back. That something was wrong in his life, and he couldn't quite get it straight. But when the story is told in Genesis 4 about the mark on Cain, why does God give Cain a mark? To show everybody that he's a murderer? No. He gives him a mark so that everyone will know that God is protecting this man. That if you dare to touch Cain, you've got God to answer for 70 times, 7 times. That God is willing to take this man who screams back to God that I can't take it. I can't spend my life being alone, rejected, wandering, shuffling through the dust of the world. I can't stand it alone. And he screams to God, and he admits what he is. I can't take it. I can't bear the punishment anymore, the guilt. Help me. And God says, okay, I'll put a mark on you. The mark of my mercy. The mark of protection. Hand that God has touched you, that no matter what you've done, you are still a man that can be accepted by God and received by God. And so it is that every one of us who watches and listens to those same groans of hunger and drives inside of us must learn to listen to them not only in ourselves but in others. And as we listen, be willing enough to admit that we have exactly the same ones. That our drives of sex and ambition and power, whether they be covered or smothered by various things, are as real as can be. And until we admit it and say to each other, I'm just like you are, even though you might be 15, or you might be 55, and I might be 35, it's still there. In one degree or another, and it's still real. And that the way that we have to begin to control these things so that they are for the blessing power instead of the curse power for me, that blessing power moves out from me to you, is that we realize something of the suffering power of Jesus Christ. That suffering power, suffering with other people, living with other people, feeling the same things that they feel, and letting it come out into the open, and then having the courage to say, yes, I felt that. I in Christ feel that. Christ in me felt that. And that one in each other, we know what we are, and begin a little to know the tingle of change. The trickle of forgiveness and of healing from soul to soul in the midst of all of those drives that keep building and building and that have to be sorted out so that what is good comes to the top and what is evil is somehow absorbed in the suffering Christ who has suffered for us. Dear God, help us to know the power of the suffering power of Christ to change each other for blessing.